You sure are, with our very special guest tonight, Colin Andrews. You know, after 30 years, where are we with the crop formation perspective? Colin, we'll talk about that and some other issues next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Colin Andrews is an electrical engineer by profession and was a principal official in the British regional government during the 70s and 80s. He coined the term crop circles in the mid-80s. In 1991, it entered the English dictionary as a new term. During his years of research, he has advised the Prime Minister, then Margaret Thatcher's cabinet, on the mystery, also Queen Elizabeth. He supervised the largest crop circle surveillance project of its kind in 1990, named Operation Blackbird, and has amassed the largest database on the subject. Welcome back to Coast, Colin Andrews. Hey, Colin, how are you?
Hi, George. It's great to be with you again. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. So many things have happened since even the last time you were on with this phenomenon. Here we are now, about 30 years later. What's the perspective? What's happening?
Well, as you rightly say, 30 years later, I can hardly believe it. But in the beginning, it was really all about gathering data, amassing theories, and working our way through them. Over a number of years, probably the first, five to 10 years was really in that very early phase of gathering the data. But I do think that I particularly entered the period the late 90s, 1999, 2000, with some funding at that time from Lawrence Rockefeller, looking then very specifically, it was felt it was necessary at that point, looking at the people making many of them. And the outcome of a two-year investigation, which I'm sure you're aware of, and many of your listeners will be, this was a two-year period looking at all of the reports that were coming in England during that period of time, and dispatching undercover people, and the funding was there to do it. So we had all kinds of resources thrown at a very specific part of this equation, which was what we perceived as being at that time people making them. And so we entered a new phase, and that really then entered a phase of what is truthful out there, what is real, versus distortion and lies. And I don't particularly want to put it as aggressively as that, but there was a real mix. And so the outcome of it all was that I am very strongly believing that we have a real and actually profound phenomenon here, and that it is driven, being driven, if not totally controlled, by another mind, a higher mind. And the fact that we didn't see this earlier, George, was that, and I was part of this equation, that we were not being, honest enough with ourselves in embracing what people had to say that were making some of them. I ran a mile away from those people for a number of years because for me, it was really, I felt, negative. It was, taking resources. It was taking enthusiasm, which drives us. It is what drives you, your interest, your passion. And these people kind of put a dent in it. But so in closing one's ears, we were not getting the full picture. And when I saw the full picture from many of these people, it was astounding because they were having the same strange experiences as many of the members of the public, the farming community, and indeed, on occasions, researchers, including myself as well. So that's really a kind of a broad brush overview of where we've come. And 30 years later, we are now dovetailed right in, and maybe not coincidentally, with the changing times that your last guest, Ellen, was in particular referring to. 2012, which I'm sure we'll come to, really does dovetail into this. And it is extraordinary and bizarre that it should be this way.
Absolutely. And I remember years ago, Colin, when we were talking on this program, we were talking about the percentages of crop formations. I remember asking you, I said, so just tell us, what do you think might be real, might be fabricated by man? And you used a figure of about 20%, if I recall, that you thought 20% of them could be authentic and from strange causes, of course, but the other 80% done by man. And, you know, I thought, my gosh, even if 1% happened to be made in a very strange way, that's a great story. 20% is remarkable, but you took a lot of heat for that, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and to a less degree now, but it is still there. Yes, I took an incredible amount of heat for that, and you were one of the few, actually, well-known people in the media world who were prepared, actually, to even give me the time of day on air at that time. It has been an amazing experience of human behavior and really how we get ourselves so entrenched in our own viewpoint and inflexibility. I had to myself think hard and long before I made the announcement on BBC television that day in 2000, you know, of the percentages you've just given. And it was because I had a feeling I was going to be in for a rough time and sure did get it. So here we are now. Now with many more people, thankfully, seeing my perspective and my results. I mean, that's all I was doing, George. I didn't like it either, but all I was doing was being honest with the people who wanted to know the truth of this.
That's right.
It was that 20% that we could not resolve during that period of time, and we threw everything at it that Lawrence Rockefeller's money could get us. With undercover people and aerial surveillance and ground data, aerial data, background checks, all kinds of things were thrown at it. Some of that is still somewhat shrouded in mystery. It was, you know, this was me working, yes, for myself, but also in supplying a report for the Rockefeller initiatives that were more related to the UFO than crop circles, but there has continued to be a perceived connection. So I was kind of, you could say, doing a job for somebody. And so that wasn't basically anybody's right to demand of me or Rockefeller that information, although there's never been an attempt to, you know, to stop that happening. Anybody who sent me a phone, made a phone call to me or requested the assessment information, they got it. But most people were on the side of just literally throwing arrows, you know, at me personally. And you know, because I appear to have disrupted the general view that most of them were real, when in fact, most of them during that 2-year period in Great Britain, I do need to kind of say that several times, were man-made. But what we were left with, the 20%, we could not find signs of a human hand. They were consistently of the more simple variety. You know, when I coined the term crop circles, that is what they were.
That's right.
Very simple, non-complex geometries. Although, I suppose, if you're looking at nature and you have a set of five circles forming a cross in a field, that is relatively complex. But, you know, in comparison to what we've seen since we last spoke, they were simple. And the 20% were very consistently, there were exceptions. I say that, you know, make that clear. There were exceptions where we would have large, complex designs that did not show any evidence of people having constructed them. So, it's been a rough 11 years?
Yeah.
But here we are, and it's still moving and looking more important than it ever did the day we first stepped foot in those fields in 1983.
Colin, why did so many people get upset with that percent? I mean, I would think that they would be jumping for joy at 20%. I mean, I tell people in the UFO field that, you know, if a few percent of the craft that people claim to have seen are from extraterrestrial locations, that's a remarkable percent. Why did they get so upset with that?
Yeah, well, I'm with you, you see. I was as baffled as you, but I think having kind of lived through that, what I was hearing from the upset, segment of our research community was that we have here a subject which appeared out of nowhere pretty well and attracted interest. Now, you know, I just happened to have been one of the first four that it attracted as a small team of individuals. But later came many others. And with these many others came some who saw the potential for income. And the money, I think, in terms of books, and I've had my share of books and media programs and magazines and T-shirts and, mugs and all anything and everything that the commercial world eventually gets its hand on came also and arrived on the doorstep of the Crop Circle mystery. And so for me, who has been, I've not ever asked for this, but I have been the high profile, little less so in the last 10 years for very good reason, which we'll talk about, but kind of less visible now, it damaged, you could say, business interests. I mean, there are government departments, the tourist industry in Great Britain, in southern England, are doing extraordinarily well on this subject. And so even they have, and I've seen the literature, I've been there many times and looked at the literature put out by government agencies of which the tourist industry, is associated, and it's distorted. It's part of the reason that I feel so strongly that the government itself has to be honest with this, because distortion does nobody any favors. The truth will take us, as your last guest pretty well said, to a better place. And as tough as it is, this one we have to store, we've got to write this out, because I do see what's happening. I do believe I see what's happening here in this mystery. And it's very important. And so, we just have to deal with it. 20%, it's a long answer, George, I apologize, but the 20%, didn't do the industry any good. It would have been far better to have left the whole mystery, the whole thing, as a floating mystery, rather than bringing percentages in, which suddenly people could hear that, and they've said it to me many times. But so you're now saying that they're all hoaxes. No, that's not what I said. Did you actually hear the 20% piece there? You've made it clear. If it were 1%, Professor Gerald... Professor Archie Roy, University of Glasgow, often said to me, Colin, if I could see the proof 100% of one circle on planet Earth being non-man-made and totally and absolutely mysterious, I would engage the entire research fraternity under him to investigate it. It would be amazing. Well, that's really where we are. I mean, we're looking at more than that. We cannot explain in any a confident way, and now we have another tier, which is there appears to be an intelligent mind interacting, even with many of those being made by the people. So I'm sure that's in the program here tonight. But that's where we are.
And we're going to get into what you think is behind it, the messages behind these. Maybe they're warnings. If you were to change your research style after all these years, would you?
That's a great question. Yes, I'm sure I would. The one thing that comes immediately to mind is I have been a little bit insular. I know that I've got the high-profile public side, which is really me just saying, yes, I'm happy to share my data. And when I'm invited, I share it. So that kind of makes a platform. But yes, I would. And I would be more encompassing of other people's viewpoint. I would involve them more in the work that I have done, and I have done with many other people, but there are others that, have been hardworking at this, and I've been, I think, a little less receptive than I should have been for a direct involvement in a broader-based research effort. So, yes, I would take more time to listen to other people.
It's a remarkable field that you are in, Colin. Tell us how you first got interested in this.
Well, how I first got interested, George, was that I didn't know anything about it. I was on my way to a regular meeting on a regular day as a, you know, senior official then in regional government in central southern England. And I was on my way to the meeting, and I was driving alone, actually a little late for the meeting, so I was zipping along at a fair pace between offices that I had there in southern England. And I was on driving on high ground at this particular instant in time. This is July 1983. And I just literally, there was a beautiful view to my left as I was driving up onto the higher ground. And there was an amphitheater, you know, a natural kind of contour. It was a beautiful spot, and I looked down very quickly. It was no more than a half-second glance because I was on a slight left-hand bend, so I couldn't keep my eye there for too many moments. And in the field below me, in a beautiful golden ripened wheat field, were five circles, and I could see that's what they were. Flattened the ground, it appeared to them. The plants were spiraled into a beautiful perfect cross, a large circle in the center, and four smaller circles surrounding it. And I took another look. And, you know, this, I got to tell you, it sounds extraordinary. It's what movies are made of. But it changed my life. It literally did, because I looked again, half second became 2 seconds, became me pulling my vehicle off the highway. Other people were just passing by. And I thought, you know, yep, I'm late, but I just got to go down there and have a look at this. And I did. It took me probably 20 minutes, actually, to get down this steep hill off the highway. I had to get underneath some barbed wire. Mm. And I walked out into the field, and it was amazing. When I eventually reached the first circle, which was harder to see when you're on flat ground. You know, I had the perspective of higher ground to see where they were and what they were. But as I reached this first circle, I stood there, and it was quiet. I could hear traffic in the background on the top of the hill, and I could hear a sound. And it took me a few seconds to work out what it was. It was the plants, these many thousands of plants that were now beautifully bent over and spiraled around, were kind of a little woven. They were holding one another to the ground. Their heads were kind of crossing one another. And some of these were clicking back up. They were trying to get back up to the sunlight. And as I stood there, it seemed like this circle was kind of alive, you could say. And it drew me right in. I mean, what the impression that I had, you know, the instincts, the animal instinct, the gut reactions, which, you know, as an engineer myself, I immediately go into the mode of what in the world has caused this? And, you know, these plants are moving. So this is new. This is very new. This might have just happened. So that was the beginning. And so, I was pulled right in. I knew what I was going to be doing that evening. And I got to my meeting eventually, got back home at the end of my day, and I got into my home. I brought home with me some privileged telephone numbers from my job, and I started calling air establishments, the police, farmers in the area, and the research began. And I've not looked back since. It's it moved from a single piece of paper to a whole room in my basement from where I'm speaking to you now.
Colin, were you in awe when you started witnessing your first formations?
Absolutely, and that is the right word. Yes, in total awe. It was almost like, in the end, it was like a drug or a tonic you had to have.
All right, hold on for a second, Colin. We're going to hit this break and come right back and find out what that awe felt like. We'll be back. And our special guest tonight, Colin Andrews, as we talk about crop formations and his latest work. And we'll be back with Colin in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Colin, we were talking about this feeling of awe that you experienced when you saw your first formations. And go ahead, I'll let you finish this, and then we'll go on to some others.
Thank you, George. Just before I do, if I may pass my condolences to you, George, for the loss of your father. I meant to do that at the beginning of the show.
Thank you, Colin.
My sincere condolences to you. Yes, I was. We were talking just before the break there about the feeling of awe. which has always impressed me. It is an emotional response. There is no question. Most people, when they first visit those circles, do get that. It's the feeling of standing in a spiritual center, a cathedral, perhaps. I think one feels the mystery. And as set as they are in natural surroundings, in attractive surroundings, with birds and the wind and all these things that most of us enjoy about our natural world, does bring about that emotional feeling of awe. And yes, that's when one of the big catchers, and it's probably one of the reasons why it's still with us and how we are still attracted to it, and that it has something happening for us. In a wider sense, which we'll get to.
Colin, you speak all over the planet about this. Do you find that the interest is gaining popularity, or is it waning?
It's solid. It is solid, George. It is not going to go away. This is it. It's going to be in our vocabulary and in our thoughts and interests, I'm sure, until we're immersed completely in the new world that is coming. And I think then it may well just fit in place and we'll be moving on, as it were. But it's pretty solid. There are factions of our community, society, that when they heard those claims, as the senior citizens Doug Barr and Dave Chorley made right back in 90, that they were all made by them, and other groups have come out and said the same since. And of course, I added my own layer, or certainly heard as that, that the 80% heard as 100% were man-made. There is no doubt that set a lot of people with closed ears, moving in other directions. So it took its dent, but it the subject itself is very solid. And whereas when I do remember this very clearly, when Pat Delgado and myself, my first co-author, the retired NASA guy, and I were first working on this, we were going to traveling in London to the publishers, where we were going to show them our manuscript for Circular Evidence, the first book written on the subject. We were talking in the bus, going down towards the publishing house. And, people around us, they were completely oblivious to what we were terming crop circles. That would not happen today. Most people, it is true there are some that don't know what they are, but most people have heard of them, and most people have got an idea and a thought about them. So it has evolved. It's here, and I think it's here to stay until we're into the new world that is on its way.
Let's talk about the various possibilities, those that are obviously not man-made. Where are they coming from? How are they occurring? What do you think? Give us the possibilities.
Yes, and it's the hardest question that I'm sure will be the hardest question of the evening. And, after all of these years and thousands of hours looking at them, visiting them around the world, it's the hardest one to answer. What I can say about it is I don't have any idea of very specifically who or what. I have a general idea, a general thought, that this is a higher mind. It could be an extraterrestrial species is interacting with the thought process of man, that he is interacting or it is interacting and is causing our general direction of consciousness to be diverted. In other words, that we are responding and reacting to something else's plan, and that it is an evolving situation and is intended to be so that we grow into it and understand it as we ourselves evolve, and it does too. It's just as easy for me to say that rather than an extraterrestrial mind, why not God? And so, you get into difficult ground a little, because you're looking at intelligence. But it is, I am totally convinced, I can give you examples of the proof that now exists.
Sure.
There is something else at work. The actual energy involved, it is suggested by the scientists who have looked at this that it's probably a low level of directed microwave that is capable of a lateral force that's difficult to see, and even in laboratory conditions, to create that lateral force. But it is not difficult to have the plants at least become supple and maneuverable and to perform according to the plan. The microwave can do that. A little too much will kill the plant, and not enough will leave them exactly as they stand there. So there clearly is know-how, you could say technology, involved. But the actual fact that they are creating geometries that include information, an intrinsic part of a design, it gives us information. It can be mathematical, astronomical, natural, but it is information. And it's often these are placed in response to an individual's thought process, you could say prayer or meditation. This is where a lot of people will just close down now, because this gets to an area where it's too much to accept as a possibility. Well, I can tell you absolutely, categorically, that is what's happening. And so, you know, when you look at get an overview of that process, it is amazing. And so, just to give you, can I give you an example or two here now,
please,
George?
Please, yeah, absolutely, Colin.
I didn't want to kind of interfere with anything you've got going on.
No.
On that end. Here's one, and I can give you many examples. Pat Delgado and I, and Busty Taylor, was stood, alongside us. We were in a field near Winchester, Hampshire, actually very close to the first field that I saw on my way to that meeting. And we were talking about the data we had gathered. We were in a circle with one ring at that time. The circle in the center was spiral clockwise, and the ring was counterclockwise. And this is what we had seen through that year. This is 86. They started to arrive with single rings across southern England. And shortly after, there would be two rings. But again, this complied, the direction of flow complied with the law of angular momentum, a law of physics, that we do understand that these spirals were in balance. So if you were to see that those spirals in a whirlwind, for example, or tornado, they would do the same thing. If you have an outer sheath, it would be counter to the inner core of the tornado. And so these are laws of physics that are understood and we work with. And we had this conversation, well, you know, at least this is a solid compliance with a physical law that we understand. Well, it was just like as if there was something listening to us, was on our shoulder, taking in that conversation. The next day, the very next day, we put this down to sheer coincidence at the time, soon to change our minds, that in the field next door, the next day, with a circle with two rings and both of them in the same direction, rather than one clock, one counterclock, this was not in balance. And so that was odd. And these things began to happen where we would say, well, how strange. You know, that's been the case until that conversation. Now it's changed. And where we, I think, this is like winning the lotto 10 times in a week. I believe it was, I've got it here somewhere, but I believe in about 89, right about 1989, I was in an aircraft with Busty Taylor, you know, one of the first four in the team. He's probably listening to this from Great Britain now. And Busty was flying the aircraft. He was the pilot. I'm alongside him as his usual passenger over flying crop circles. And this also was in Hampshire when Busty, he was banking his aircraft to the left. Mm-hmm. And he said, wouldn't it be something if we were to see all of the circle designs we've seen, which were all very simple at that time, all put together as one intricate pattern? And the next day, again, it, now this, the, you know, the, just kind of the odds of this happening. where the aircraft was in the sky the day before. The second day, he was with Omar Fowler, a UFO researcher from Spain at that time, was in the aircraft with him, not myself. The passenger looks down, and underneath the aircraft is every design we have ever seen laid into one pattern. Now, that rang some alarm bells, because Busty Taylor didn't make that design. I didn't make that design. I couldn't have done it if I'd have wanted to. And so these were the early indicators that the phenomenon itself was interacting with us.
Why did they make it, and why did they make it so difficult? It's always in, it looks like it's in symbols or clues. Could they not make it any harder for us?
Yeah, good question, George. I don't. I really can't offer an answer to that. It does seem ludicrous that it could be that this hard and should be this hard. We're having to work for it. That might be one thing here, is we're having to understand each piece of it, and that we are working with nature. We are nature itself, and so are the plants. The geometries are suggesting nature is changing into a chaotic state. And that also, you know, comes from a, you know, from into the natural world. So it could be that, and they're not going to spell it out. They could, I'm sure, if they can flatten plants, they could write down there that, you know, E equals whatever, whatever, whatever. It's true. It's a great question, but it is the way it is. And I've got some ideas on that maybe when we come down to the final part of the show, I think.
This is just an amazing situation that's been out there. Let's take a few minutes if we can, Colin, and we're almost at the top of the hour. But the British government, what was their initial reaction to this as you advised them? And then did they really get into investigating these things?
Yeah, well, this is a very big question. The reaction was that I guess the first thing was that I had a retired military officer arrive at my door, and this is where it all began. I don't know who sent that officer, and maybe others out there listening do, but I was invited to submit a report initially. There were several that followed for the Margaret Thatcher cabinet to Nicholas Ridley, the Minister for the Environment, and also to the head of state, the Queen. Well, that I did, and things kind of moved in all kinds of directions after that. I was getting personal letters from the Queen's private secretary, from Nicholas Ridley, mm-hmm. the Secretary of State. even the Deputy Prime Minister was in direct contact, Geoffrey Howe, and I visited some establishments within the British government, the top secret air establishment at Boscombe Down. It's an experimental research establishment, and saw and indeed have copies of photographs they were taking of the crop circle mystery. I attended and spoke with officers in two Hampshire counties. These would be states in the United States, in Wiltshire and Hampshire, and was given photographs their aerial surveillance aircraft were taking. So it became very obvious that the British government and the police were involved at some level already in the crop circle mystery. It became more than apparent that they had a hand during Operation Blackbird, which was the, as you said in the opening of the show, the largest surveillance operation ever undertaken of its kind into certainly, well, any mystery of this kind. And I coordinated that with BBC Television, Nippon Television Japan, and a small military attachment that was provided to us for that operation. These were armed, these were uniformed military okay. that were on site and visible to the cameras that were there and to the public who eventually got to know of the project that was underway. But many things happened during Operation Blackbird, one of which was that a D notice was issued. Now, the Ministry of Defense will deny this. I have the proof that a D notice was issued to the media who were present on the first day when circles appeared in front of the surveillance cameras. And the D notice was issued to stop transmission of that event and timed to as the first station was taken off air, four military aircraft that were observed by me personally and people on site, photographic evidence exists for anybody who would wish to counter this, were in a holding loop to the east of the operation and timed their overhead pass, four military aircraft, at the precise moment Pat Delgado and I entered the field with two television cameras from two different networks from two different countries, were held outside of that field whilst we walked into the field. And so there is nobody that can tell me that this was a casual, non-government involvement, that this was something that did happen and that could have happened without the involvement of the British government. There's a much more to be said about all of this, but that's the core kind of answer to your question.
That's pretty remarkable all by itself, Colin, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is. And that's all factual, George. It's evidence exists. Much of it is in the book, Government Circles, which is a new book out there. I'm not wishing to plug it all on your program. I'm simply making that available to people who would want to see the evidence. The documents are there, and there's more to come. I think it's always, my father always said to me, it's never any bad thing to keep one or two cards up your sleeve. And that is what I am doing, because, as you said earlier, it's not all the time being a very easy ride. For some reason or other, truth does not always, is not all that easy to squeeze into the public domain. So we have to work at that.
Absolutely. Colin, we're going to take a break in about a minute or so, but I do want you to tell us about your next public appearance. People just truly enjoy listening to you. Any speeches coming up?
Yes, I do. Thank you. There are three future events, the first of which I believe you're also there, is the International UFO Congress, February 21-26 in Scottsdale, Arizona. The second is going to be the first of its kind, the first time I've ever done this. It's a full weekend with right from the very beginning to the very end, piecing it together with all of the interactions that we've spoken of, a couple of them, with how we're moving into this new period now where we've got to embody the shift in consciousness. And we're going to have a weekend, and that's with the Fellowship of the Spirit Learning Center in New York State. That's coming up. All of this is on the website, georgecolinandrews.net. And the third, as it stands at the moment, is really going back to the source of the 2012 Mayan prophecy, and that's going to be a visit between December 15 and 22nd, which it really does encompass the end of the Mayan calendar, Chichen Itza, and that will be with Power Place Tours, as I said, on December 15, 22, and that'll be with my wife, Dr. Cynthia Andrews, Greg Braden, the Mayan Elder Ombudsman will be there, Robert Baval, Marcia Shimoff, and I believe a few others.
All the heavyweights, Colin. Stay with us. We're coming back for more with Colin Andrews on Coast to Coast AM.
Get daily show updates right to your inbox for free with the new Coast Zone newsletter. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com.